This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, welcome to another Green and White Stats special where we attempt to look at the numbers behind the performances. We've pulled together three of the brightest minds in the Argyle Life cinematic universe. And you also have me, James Stables, the typist behind One Team in Devon, the weekly Argyle newsletter. With me is everyone's favourite Italian Gianna Alberto Lauciello, former football data analyst at DAZN. I had to look that pronunciation up, and formerly Eurosport Italy. Alberto, how are you doing?
Hello, everyone. I'm fine. It's great to be back on this podcast with you guys.
How's your new role at DAZN?
Quite exciting, because I have to deal every weekend with very famous journalists and ex-football stars, with the likes of Ciro Ferrara, for example, who's a football legend. And I guess it's known also outside of Italy. So, yeah, it's very, very interesting. It's a completely different job from the previous one. Exciting. There's a lot of pressure, but it's going well, thanks.
And how are you enjoying Fozball?
Sorry?
How are you enjoying Fozball?
Ah, Fozball. Sorry, I didn't get the the play with words. Hey, if I can say, I don't want to spoil anything. Let's say just that in general, when I see football as an entertainment, so I prefer when the teams score more goals and maybe also concede more. But, you know, as a form of entertainment, that's what I am looking for. So let's say we are not in the same, we do not maybe agree on the same style of play, but as long as we can try our chance to stay up, I'm supporting the coach.
And with us as well, Green and White's resident data analyst and Twitter enforcer, Ben. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Not quite sure I'm supposed to follow that little intro from Alberto. I'm enjoying my current role at Green and White, where I get to rub shoulders with such celebrities as Sam Down and John Allsop. Yes, not quite so impressive, but yeah, I'm really glad to be here. It's always great when we've got Alberto on to teach us what we're doing wrong and help us to hone our analytical skills.
And Adam Price, Argyle Life's tactician-in-chief. Did you have a good birthday after Sunday's two-hour podcast record?
Yeah, I did, thank you. I mean, admittedly, there wasn't quite so long left of it after we finally got off air after what was a bumper edition, but it was great to be involved, and to reflect what everyone said, it's great to be involved again. So I'm still happy.
Well, it's been a fairly uneventful few months since our last stats podcast in January. But going through that showed us some surprising data about Argyle's defensive organisation under Schumacher and the importance of Finn Azaz. This time around, we're going to be examining Foster's Argyle. This is what this is the sort of data the club will be looking at when they're making any big decisions over the next few months. So it's good for us to take a look and put all of our prejudices and our beliefs aside and just have a look at everything from a completely statistical and neutral point of view for an hour. So we're going to be quantifying some of the things we know. We're going to be looking at Argyle in attack, Argyle in defence, and Foster's style of play. We're going to be comparing his numbers to the Schumacher era. And then in the second half, we're going to be looking at the statistical chances of Argyle staying up. So we'll get straight to it and get into attack. And I don't think there'll be too many stats that really surprise too many people. Obviously, goals and shots on target is one that's been pretty well known as extremely disappointing at Home Park. But let's have a look at the Foster era in general. So shots themselves are 41% down over the Schumacher Championship era, and our shot accuracy is down 31% as well. Fewest headed shot in the league. We're 19th for big chances created, and that itself is 36% down on the Schumacher era. Alberto, you put these stats together. You know, were you expecting to see these kinds of numbers, and how does that stack up to some of the other teams you look at when you're on your day-to-day job in Italy?
Well, I wasn't, but simply because I didn't know Foster as a coach before I was nominated for the Argyle job. I've always trusted the board to find the proper lead for our team. And I think they, of course, weighted well all their options. And I can kind of understand his approach to football, because we have to consider that we don't have anymore the same team, the exactly same team that we had before the transfer market. We lost a key player, which is Fina Zaz, key for assisting and key also in the whole offensive phase. And together with that, we lost his backup, basically. It was Candle. They are not the only two players that changed, but that kind of gives you the idea that maybe a new coach could have brought in different players and try a different approach. And I can kind of understand, in general, that's what I was... That's what I would expect also from Schumacher beginning of the season. You know, you come in a league where you have the lowest budget, and as far as I know, and you don't really expect the team with the lowest budget to go out and play that risky offensive football and trying to score those many goals, which we already told the public they were gonna reduced, because we were shooting accuracy that was unsustainable throughout the whole season. So I can kind of understand to the trying to be more defensive and trying to counter attacks. Was I expecting this drop, though, in the offensive output? Maybe no, not even that, because some of the players still does. And I thought maybe we would have had like a kind of a midway, both offensively and defensively, like raise and decrease in stats. But yeah, that's what we got now, and that's what we have to work on, possibly strengthen again, still our defense, and trying to do better in our offense. We have better numbers in counter-attacking. We are first for fast breaks, which apparently it's a specialty of the team now. Like we are first for both fast break and shots from fast breaks, and that's... an increase of 70% from the Schumacher era. So it's a completely new way of attacking. My worries comes when, for example, the opponent score first and then can have like the time to reassemble and set their defense. And then we have to attack, and we seems to be running short on ideas, especially when we are trailing, when we are losing the game with we produce less dangerous chances. And yeah, it's still kind of a mess. It seems like the players haven't gelled between each other, but they've been together for quite some time. So let's see. Let's see. I'm hopeful, but the offensive phase, of course, needs an implementation, let's say.
It's a, just before we move on, there's a stat you popped in here, 21st in the league for expected goals on target. Do you want to just talk about that metric very quickly? Because you put in your notes that, you know, this is something that we look at the players for.
Yes, so yeah, sure.
Have a quick you know, we're talking a lot about Foster and how he's implemented the team, but is there an element in some of these stats that the players, for whatever reason, confidence, are not making the most of what we have?
Well, I think Ben is an expert on shooting accuracy and also on expected goals on target. So maybe it would be interesting to listen also to his side of this topic. But what I can say, basically, just to make it easier, expected goals on target are expected goals that take into consideration where the shot starts from and where it ends. So if it ends like nearby the post, it's more difficult to prevent the goals. If it ends more in the center of the goal, it's easier to save the goal. If it's outside, if it's on the post or outside of the goal, it's zero. It's a zero value. And the fact that we have such a low value of expected goals on target, it means that our accuracy dropped, basically. And also the shots that we're that the players are taking are not that dangerous. Indeed, even though we didn't score those many goals, funnily enough, we should have theoretically on if we could simulate the league thousands of times, we should have scored even a little bit less, like 30% less, more or less, if I remember correctly. Which is not really due to, I mean, it's partially due to, of course, the coach, but it's also, and the defense that the player find, but it's also about them, because the ultimate shooters are them, and they if they have a chance, they have to, if they're good, they have to try to increase the chance to score. So yeah, that's what I have to say, but I'm also interested to listen from Ben, because I remember that the shooting accuracy was one of his one of the topics that he was interested in.
I mean, just to cut in quickly, I mean, to the idea of scoring 30% less than we've already scored is quite a staggering thing to contemplate. Ben, brings us really on nicely. I have for you, you know, huge decline in shots, 41% down, accuracy down, the XG on target down. Why?
Well, of course, stats can't tell you the whole picture. As Alberto says, you know, the game state affects a lot of things. If you look at the sort of expected goals for our game against Swansea, they had something like an XG of 2.77 because we scored and then basically defended, and it was wave after wave. Now, the XG on target, which means the quality of their finishing, as Alberto has talked about, was rubbish. So, you know, if they'd been better, you know, that would have you know, been curtains for us. But that, you, if you look at the XG of that game, it sort of tells a story that isn't, you know, true if you're trying to use that to draw conclusions on its own. And the game state is important. And I feel like there's lots of the intangibles that go with these stats. For example, Alberto was talking about it being on the players and the players' mentality. He mentioned that they sometimes don't look like they know each other, or they've played with each other. And that's something which doesn't show up on stat sheets, but can reflect on the coaching and things going on behind the scenes. So, for example, the players were taking shots from all over the place and they were hitting the target. Does that indicate confidence? You can't necessarily conclude that, but you know, did the coach instill, did Schumacher perhaps instill in them the belief that they could go out and do it? did they spend more time on the training ground practicing those sort of, you know, build-ups and things? We know that Foster is more of an off-the-ball coach. Is there more time being spent in the off-the-ball work? And that loss of familiarity with, you know, the less shots we're now taking, the less opportunities are presenting themselves. Is there a drop in the sort of the muscle memory, the instincts of the forward players to get those shots on target, to put them in those high XG on target areas? I always sort of, to explain the XG on target, I always say that penalties have an XG of 0.79 because around 79% of penalties are scored. But if you put the ball over the bar, it has zero chance of going in. So the XG on target is zero. And so the XG on target really tells you how well the players are finishing. And yes, we were at an unsustainable level of finishing previously, but now we've dropped even below the average XG that you would expect, or the XG on target is not even comparable to the XG, whereas before the XG on target, that is the quality of the finishing, was exceeding the XG quite considerably. It's now dropped down to even below XG, not even at an average. And that to me could suggest a number of things beyond the players just all of a sudden becoming rubbish. It could suggest, as I said, a lack of confidence, a lack of practice, a lack of sharpness because of the chances that are being produced. But also, as Alberto said, and it kind of reflected in sort of like blocked shots and things as well, that we're just not getting into positions. I don't want to jump on to further points, but if you look at sort of where we have possession, etc., we're just not getting into positions where we're opening up clear and decent opportunities for players to get away clean strikes of the ball. So obviously, if you're taking a shot under pressure, if you're jostling with a man, if you're trying to shoot through five different people, the chances of you finding the right spot are difficult, even if you manage to hit the target. Whereas before, with the clever movements, we always talk about sort of the way that the midfielders would go out, which would mean Whittaker and Mumba could come back round, that their movement would draw men, distract defenders, and then you've got the shot for Finnazars or whoever it was to Morgan Whittaker to find the top corner with a bent shot. Now, obviously, that relied on their wonderful finishing. Not all of those shots go in, but the space was created. Even though that's a low XG shot, they've got open space to take that shot in rather than being put under pressure. So that would show up as a low XG shot, but high XG on target, because it's sort of being placed ever so well, but they're able to place it well and it's able to be in a high XG on target shot purely because they've, you know, the space has been opened up by the play. So those are the kind of things I think that factor into this drop off. I don't think it is solely down to maybe the players not showing up per se, but there's all the psychological factors and the effect of the situations in which the shots are being taken, I think, plays a big part. But, you know, we are taking significantly less shots, and we're taking significantly less shots than the teams around us since Foster's come in. Of the teams in the 12 league games, he's had shots per game. Of all the teams down around us, I think there's only Blackburn and Millwall, yeah, have taken less shots per game than we have. And, you know, Millwall have had a similar strength of fixtures as we have. Blackburn have been awful, but they've sort of got that little couple of points cushion. They're still picking up results despite that. So, yeah, we're comparatively not creating in any way, shape or form like we were. And as Alberto said, although you could expect maybe the defence to improve a little and the attack to drop a little, that seems to have, so far, seems to have been a little bit unequal in the developments.
I mean, the thing about these stats is you have to use your eye. And you can see in recent performances, especially at home, the movement hasn't been right. The style of build-up has completely changed. We are going to get onto that from a statistical point of view as well. But Adam, how much of this do you put down to person? How much can we put on personnel? We sat around the four of us at the last stats pod with Azaz out of the picture, looking at his numbers, and there was no way that the attacking stats we were firing before Christmas could be maintained by taking his numbers out of the equation. Like, no one would be able to replace that. How much of this is down to that? How much of this is personnel? And do you think Foster was right to move to the 3-4-3 when he came in based on personnel available?
I think, yeah, if we look at personnel and we look at, you know, who exactly is to blame for all this happening, it's obviously, you know, there's going to be no one factor. A number of things are going to be to blame, as it were. And I think this is an area where I do feel a little for Foster and Drew, because it's very easy for us to sit here and say, well, we know this team can play attacking football. We know they can go forward. Why can't we just go back to where we're doing that? One major reason, as was covered last time, is because of Finn Azaz and his absence. You can't just go back to that system and expect it to work, to function just as well when that's not available. So do I think Foster made the wrong choice going to this formation? I think it's debatable. I think regardless, I don't necessarily blame him, because when in hiring Ian Foster, the board and Neil Jusnet would have known full well what his preferred formation is, and going through that interview process, if they're going to come in and say, okay, we think you're our man, it would be on the basis that switching to that shape and, you know, bringing in transfers which all favoured that shape would have been the strategy. So do I think the formation has worked? I mean, I think our eyes have told us a big story on that one, but is there necessarily blame on the head coach there? I'm not quite so sure that there is. But in terms of the personnel that are at the club, I again have a bit of sympathy, and I think that there's a transfer of lady luck, as it were. I mean, if we look at the shot conversion that was happening in Schumacher's area, I think we're all agreed that we loved that, and it was absolutely unsustainable. Like, it was great while it lasted, and we loved putting those shots in there, but that's something that a real struggle to make last for an entire season. If you were to look at the shot conversion rates for the league, I mean, we're still right up there. And the reason we're still right up there is because we were so high in Schumacher's era that we were able to almost eat up what's happened with Foster when we've had the exact opposite thing. So I think that just goes to show just how much we were overperforming with our shot accuracy under Schumacher, and how that's not sustainable. But I think much like Ben said, it's very difficult. You'd expect a drop-off, that's fair enough. It's very difficult to justify it going completely the other way and finding that we're actually scoring, or having our shots significantly below what they should be in terms of our XG against our XG on target. That, of course, you can pin that on the players in many ways, because ultimately Ian Foster can't put the ball into the goal himself. But I think there are a lot of mitigating circumstances there, almost, to be honest, that I think have been excellently covered previously. Can you act on instinct when you're not getting many chances a game? No, you can't. If you're getting one big chance a game and you miss it, does it stick out run rather when you're getting five big chances a game and you miss one? Yeah, of course it does. That's clearly a bigger issue. And again, that's going to impact your confidence as well. So all in all, I think, yeah, as with everything, there's a lot of factors here. The players obviously haven't been performing to the way that they were, but one, I think it would be very unfair to expect them to keep performing in that way. And two, let's put it this way. If you don't blame the coaching, fair enough. But I think it's completely fair to say that I don't think the coaching has helped in this circumstance. And that's led us to where we are now.
I mean, I don't think there's any surprises for anyone who's even watched a highlights package of Argyle over the last few games from those stats. But it is quite stark to see 41% less shots throughout the Foster era and a 25% drop off in XG. But moving on to the approach, these are interesting numbers that, again, don't necessarily fly in the face of what we can see. But obviously, we're definitely not a possession team under Foster, 22nd in the league for both passes attempted. And for possession, passes down 15% on Schumacher era, and we weren't especially possession-based team at times under Schumacher. 20th for passing accuracy. We're gonna zoom in on that a little bit in a minute. And the worst team for passes in the opponent's half. We also have expected assists have dropped 31%, but crosses up 45%. We're second in the league for launches, which means booting it up from the back, but 23rd in the league for accuracy of booting it up from the back. Alberto, what statistically is this night and day from Schumacher? How is this difference from how is this different from Schumacher? To what extent, and what do those differences look like?
So I wouldn't say really it's a night and day change, but it has some significant differences, of course. As you mentioned already, we weren't even with Schumacher a possession-based team. We were already a bit vertical, but now we are even more vertical. Again, as I said before, we are doing it. We are good at fast breaks. That has saved us in some of the past games. And if you just look, even if you're not a football expert and you look at the game against Preston, you can see like the amount of launches, the amount of long passes. Everyone can notice that. So we are relying hard on that. But you can kind of see that we are still not quite used to exploiting this tactic, because as you said before, we are one of the worst team in the leagues for the accuracy of these long passes. And I give you an example. Rotherham, which under the eyes of everybody, not doing well this year, particularly not doing well, they are doing much better than us in launching and launching accuracy. Why? Because I guess this is my guess, is because their team was since the beginning based on that, and they knew that that should have been the kind of the approach that they would have had. Instead, with the change we had with Schumacher, then that four games period of transition, and then with Foster, I don't think that the team was planned for that. We do have defenders that are skilled with passing, so I can understand it's kind of in our it can be one of the sides that one of the point that we can exploit, but still I think we have to understand how to do that better. And other than that, I can see that in general we are relying less on passes. We are we have a bad accuracy passing in the opponent's half. The shots we have are less assisted, which means that we kind of rely more maybe on the singular player trying to create his chances rather than, those one-twos exchange or pass matrices that can easily free up a player to have a chance at scoring. You said that we have... we are crossing like 40% more before. That's kind of easy because basically with Schumacher, we weren't crossing at all. So we are still not a crossing team, especially from corners. For corners, basically, we never cross, and when we do, we are terrible at that. And I was expecting to, like with the likes of Giabi and other taller players, maybe getting better in the aerial game and in the set piece game. But unfortunately, we are still a bit back. We're still one of the worst teams in the league. But we do cross more on open play. And one of the reasons we do that is that if somebody remembers from the last podcast, I mentioned that it's useful if you have a plan B when like stuff doesn't work and you just need to shoot and try to get level or try to win the game. And one of the easiest ways is to go on the wings and try to cross in. It gives you few chances of scoring, but you can do it often, like more often, and try to get more, again, chances of scoring. So We simply gave up on the pullback passes, which on the other hand is a type of pass that can give you a high scoring chance amongst the, like, when you get to the end line of the pitch. That's the statistically the way to pass the ball that leads you to a higher XG. Of course, if you have the players that know how to come in the area and insert them well in the environment.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So, yeah, under this point of view, it's a big change. We're also dribbling more, I've seen, but with less success. Kind of understandable. We are winning more falls, so that's it would be useful if we could use the set pieces, but again, at the moment, let's say it would be good since the staff, I am kind of understanding, it's still forming. If I understood well, Foster hasn't finished to have his, like, back home staff to coach the players. That would be actually good to have a set piece specialist, because you can exploit both offensively and defensively some holes that we have in the game, let's say. One good thing, we haven't conceded a penalty yet. That's I think something good so far. I don't want to bring bad luck, but so far that's a good thing. And unfortunately,
there was a stat you had about passing accuracy in the opposition's half. Have you got that one in front of you? That seemed to have gone down quite significantly under Foster, under Schumacher. What's again a lack of movement, organization that we were talking about again? Why is the passing sort of gone wrong? That's again something you would see in the eye, and you'll sort of think, well, what's going on there?
I think it's a tactical thing. Again, it's wedding there. So with Schumacher, you know, we're having less possession. Ironically, there's kind of a similar principle involved in the build-up for both of the to really oversimplify it and be reductionist. You know, under Schumacher, the keeper had to play, but with the ball at his feet. But the idea was in the build-up, eventually you draw someone in that would create an overload for either Houghton to ping it to a fullback breaking up the line, or to one of the other two midfielders who play the more advanced roles into space. And the ball would advance. You'd create the overload there, and we'd move dynamically through the thirds. With this system, it seems to be a similar idea of keeping the ball until there's an overload and then breaking away. That the idea of committing someone out to draw someone out of position from the defensive formation and then breaking. The difference seems to be that we're now, when we're getting caught under pressure, going a bit more safety first than just clearing the ball upfield. That high number of launches seems to be a safety first approach, whereas before we would perhaps give the ball away. And I think Alberto highlighted brilliantly in the stats piece last time how we were second to bottom in the league for allowing penalty box entries. We seem to give the ball away and let people drive us, whether that's either in transition or, you know, just being porous when we don't have the ball. But certainly part of that is we give the ball, under Schumacher, we gave the ball away in more dangerous areas. Whereas now we're launching the ball more. But because we only then create, because we don't play more risky build-up play, we don't necessarily develop the opportunities to get into the box. With the teams are quite happy to let us build up slowly in front of them until they catch us and we have to launch the ball, as it were. So you're not getting the dynamic build-up play. And also, you know, I always go back to this point, but under Schumacher, that the two wide men were very wide and very deep, which created space in the middle, which means you can obviously play more passes in the middle and you can advance the ball better through the middle. At the moment, they seem to be sitting quite deep. In fact, almost getting in the way of the wing backs, rather. And the whole point of having wing backs is that they can go box to box, as it were. They've got the freedom to not be so defensively minded because you've got the three centre backs and a screening midfielder. In fact, we had two screening midfielders against Blackburn, really. And the idea is that they can go for... So really, with the wing backs, you should be expecting your forwards, your inside forwards, to really be outside forwards. And that just doesn't seem to be happening tactically, which means we're just not getting, you know, as Alberto said, we're not getting the assisting passes, that is set, you know, passes which are setting up opportunities, which, as I mentioned in the attacking section we just talked about, that was one of the you know, the hallmarks of Schumacher's attacking build-up play, was the movement, the passing to set up people in space. So I think that's more of a result of the tactical. There's more I don't keep using the word safety, but more perhaps reticence to be so cavalier. And of course that's good if it has a benefit, in that you can keep the ball recycled until you get the chance to break. But if you're just recycling and getting nowhere because you keep having to punt it away eventually, you don't ever get to the opposition's half, especially if you're not, as we've said, the accuracy of those is in the very, you know, bottom, and the accuracy of those launches. So you're launching the ball upfield and you're not really picking up the second balls and the third balls that you'd hope to, even if you're not getting the accuracy right, we're not getting that, or the second or third ball. So, you know, I think that's the big worry. We don't seem to be able to, you know, under Schumacher, we did have more possession, but I don't think that was necessarily in the attacking part of the pitch. A lot of that would have been sort of playing it around the back, trying to draw, you know, the press to be able to break through it. But that doesn't mean that when we got there, we didn't do more with it. And we certainly, you know, to the eye, we did a lot more around the box, and we seem a lot more predictable now because we're trying to build up a certain way. Unless it is those breaks that we're generating, we do seem to be building up in slowly in front of the opposition back line, which again contributes to those low XG on target attempts, because, you know, we're not breaking through the lines, as Alberto said, the complete drop off in pullbacks. You know, that was brilliant, wasn't it? You used to watch someone drive to the line, pull it back. There was someone arriving to meet the ball. We just don't do that anymore. Mikel Miller has become sort of a fan favorite because he's the only guy really able to kind of do that on the pitch. But it doesn't seem to be a general theme of play. It almost seems like he's a bit of a maverick out there. It doesn't seem to ever mesh with what else is going on, the patterns of play elsewhere on the pitch. So I do think that, like you say, that lack of passes in the opposition's half, and especially in the final third, the lack of penalty box entries, etc., being so low now, that seems to me to be a side effect of the there being less commitment to attack and more commitment to sort of like that safety first approach in build up.
Yeah, the 45% increase in crosses does feel like the Miller effect, of one, having wing backs in the first place, but also seem to be predominantly building up down the right and having more freedom on the right, on the left, and delivering crosses from there. And obviously the cross accuracy hasn't been great, and that's obviously borne out on the eye. Adam, second in the league for launches, 23rd in the league for accuracy of launches. How damning is that of the system, of the tactics, of the instructions, when we're obviously not very good at it, and we don't have the, you know, I don't think anyone arguably had the players to really benefit from a booting from the back strategy, right?
No, not at all. And I think the point, Alberto, you made about Rotherham is completely reasonable. I mean, their team is clearly made for that sort of style of play. I mean, you can try launching for days, and you know you're going to have more success if you've got the likes of Tom Eves and Jordan Hugill in your attack than you are Ben Wayne. You know, it's just the way it is. So I think, yeah, it's hard to put anything on the players there, in truth, because you know it's clear that a lot of this is not working. Now, there can be mitigation. Okay, these things can be inversely proportional, because obviously if a team launches rarely, they only like to do it when it's the most obvious thing to do. And that's more likely, obviously, then to come off because they've made the decision to do it when at the best time. Whereas if you're launching with impunity, then you're less likely to make it work. But you're certainly less likely to make it work if your team is not built for it, which we're not. And I think that is something that I struggle with, because it's one of those things where, again, we're looking at football being an entertainment business. The stats are telling us this and our eyes are telling us the same. You know, nobody enjoys going and watching us launch it whenever we can. I think it just speaks to a lack of ideas, because the crossing point is a perfect example. Now, the vast majority of crosses, by their nature, are unsuccessful. It's very difficult to create a chance, but the way that crossing can obviously work is the more and more you put the ball in the mixer, eventually the chances are it's going to drop for you, and you'll be able to get a shot away. But again, it's not the sort of tactic that's going to get people off seats. It's not the sort of tactic that's going to be successful all the time. And it's another thing alongside those launches that we've all spoken about that baffles me a little. I mean, the pullback point is another fine example. We're not doing a great deal of that anymore, and I think the way that it can be cumbersome, the way that we're not getting the ball forward at pace, you know, in the way that suits us rather than launching it, means that, you know, teams are more than happy for us to play in front of us. It can be very difficult then to find space in the box for that pullback to be successful, and it's great when it is. We know Whittaker can be good at it. I think I'll go back even further. It's the sort of thing, actually, that Graham Carey and Ruben Lemiris, I remember being particularly excellent at, is finding that space in the middle of the area for that pullback and putting a left foot shot into the roof of the net. You know, that's the sort of thing that we know can be successful. And right now, in a lot of our build-up and a lot of the way that we're launching with no clear strategy, it makes it difficult to be successful in more ways than one. So yes, the stats are bad, and yeah, that maybe there is mitigation for that, maybe there isn't. But I think what our eyes are telling us is exactly what the stats are telling us at the same time. That there's a lot of things here that aren't working for whatever reason. And one of those for sure is that we've got a style of play at the moment that really doesn't seem to suit what the team was built for. Now, could that be different? I mean, I guess that's an argument for, well, if Foster had a summer transfer window rather than just a month in January to build a side, and we had something that we were looking to build a success around, then yes, of course, you know, that may improve his chances. But ultimately, that's not the situation we're in. We're in a very different place now of having 8 games potentially to decide our championship status, and there's no transfer window in between. So we've got to look at it from that basis. Is it unfair on Foster to look at it and say that? I mean, yeah, I'd say it is, but it's the situation. We've got to live with that, and there's got to be another way that's going to suit our players just that little bit more, and may even be more exciting as we do it.
It is unfair on Foster, but it also speaks to questions marks over, like I asked you earlier, whether he was right to move to certain formations or strategies, sure. Or whether he should have, he could have waited to the summer to implement his style with a full transfer window and made more
or even
to the existing system.
Yeah, I was gonna say even revert. You know, he doesn't know his players till he comes in, does he? You know, and so he can try the system, see how hard he does as the target man. When you're launching the ball as you are and it's consistently not reaching, or it's consistently you're losing possession, then sure, you know, there's been the 12 league games, the 2 cup games. At some point, maybe you say, well, this is, maybe we'll shelve this for the summer, as you've suggested, lads. You know, until we've had a proper transfer window, let's maybe regress a little bit towards what the team, the personnel here the star men were built, were bought for what their strengths are and adapt a little bit. Even if you don't want to come in and just carry on where you left off, you can give it a try. But when the stats are that damning, and as you said in earlier, James, they'll be looking at this data much more in depth than we are. You know, so when you see those stats and you keep doing the same thing, that suggests, you know, really a lack of maybe ideas or a lack of a rigidity and maybe unwillingness to compromise to a degree. I don't know. That's what it suggests to me.
It looks like it for sure. Right, I want to move on through defence a bit more quickly so we can get on to Whittaker and survival. So Foster came in presumably with a brief to tighten us up at the back, and there are successful numbers here in terms of that. XGA, expected goals against, 22% down. Goals conceded, 11% down, so not quite tracking with XGA, but we'll come on to that. More tackles, 25% more tackles. Less successful tackles, 12% down. That seems out of whack. Less big chances, 35%. Less headed shots, down 35%. Less shots from fast breaks. Alberto, a few things here. It wasn't hard to make a good impression on the Schumacher numbers defensively, was it? But he's done that. There is a slight disconnect between some of the theoretical numbers, as in expected goals against, and the actual goals conceded. And we've seemed to be conceding more from outside the box. And with sort of, I guess, lower XG shots. Does that point to goalkeeping issues? And when you look through these numbers, what were the conclusions you drew on a playing style and sort of, a tangible level?
Well, of course, it's under the eye of everybody that we are more solid at the back at the moment. We are conceding less, thanks to also the off-ball tactics of Foster's compared to the style of play that we have that we had with Schumacher before. We are still conceding some XG. I mean, we have let's say an average number of goals conceded. But as you mentioned before, the goals from outside the area are kind of a problem because they are not many, but they are more than the ones that other teams allow. I think there are a couple of problems I've seen from watching the games and watching the stats. From watching the stats, compared to the first part of the season, the goalkeepers have been slightly underperforming. Before I said a little imprecision, I meant that offensively we were overperforming and we should have scored 30% less. Instead, we just scored 30% more of what we created, but it's 24% less of what we scored that reflects the expected goals on target. In this case, instead, we should have basically received, conceded less goals. We're not talking about big numbers, but still, they are those numbers that can make a difference. No, in tight matches, like if I ask you about the Blackburn games or the Preston games, if I tell you, what if we won the first and drew the last? Nobody would be surprised. I mean, it's not that games were so much were so plain of being like so much worse than the opponent. So yeah, we've had good goalkeeping for the rest of the season. We are struggling a little bit more in this part, but we'll see. In general, the keepers are good at saves, so they have proven that, especially Cooper, but also Connor Hazard. So I'm quite confident that they can slightly improve their performances. And then, yes, there are other other data that are we are still good at blocking shots. Although I can see some difficulties in the man marking, and especially we are conceding some goals where either again we are not marking the player, or we are marking it but we still allow like a shot under our legs, or we can't like really block those shots that for the keeper are more dangerous, because when you have the defender marking the forward, you kind of consider the space blocked by the defender kind of safe. No, you're not expecting the defender to let the ball pass from under the legs. So those are difficult shots to be saved. This is what taught me, like actually last weekend, the brother of Fabio Cannavaro, or another legend that I had the pleasure to meet in my new job. So he was talking about Naples, which had a similar problem. So now I could see that in some of the recent goals. Phillips is a young lad, he's very good, but sometimes you can see those like kind of naive marking from him and from the also other defenders. Yeah, for the rest, in general, I have to say that the stats defensive-wise are good. As you said already, we have had less through balls, which was a big problem with Schumacher, if you remember the analogy that they made with a hot knife through butter. It was like the opponents were cutting us with those through balls. Now we managed to reduce them. Also, we allow less touches in our box, which we used to allow so many. It was like eventually you could see that any offensive attack of the opponent could have been a dangerous one with Schumacher. Now you can see that we are more solid. So we are tackling more. There are encouraging stats. And actually, sorry, before I said that we're not conceding penalties, which is correct to say now. I did a little spoiler. Indeed, I wanted to mention that we were going less into the opponent half, but I mixed up. So I did. Sorry for the spoiler. But yeah, we haven't conceded a penalty yet, which I think is remarkable. We should get better at defending, especially in the aerial part. We can get better at defending. We have to be more careful with the shots from outside, but we've reduced the average shot danger that we face. So we have improved. There's still room for improvement. But yeah, we have to recognize that we have to give credit to Foster. He has improved a pretty tragic situation that he found when he came in.
Yeah, I think we did the maths. It wasn't too hard to sort of work out that if you take Azaz's contributions out, we're going to see a drop in XG. That would the XG against was so high that we had to make improvements. So yeah, credit to him for that. And if you presume, Ben, if we can get something firing through in front of the opposition's goal, if we can create a bit more, then we'd be, you know, we could be looking at a more positive situation. It's, you know, not saying that will happen, but if it could happen, that would be a long way to safety, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, for example, some of those stats, like the increase in tackles, you know, we've got less of the ball. So you need to contextualize that. Of course, we're going to be attempting more tackles because the opposition's got the ball more. But some of those are genuinely, you know, the conceding less big chances means we're better organized, I think, in general, if you want to draw a very generalized conclusion. So you know, there is a lot of good improvement. The problem is, as you've just suggested, we're not producing a great deal. So it sort of means that when we make those individual mistakes, or when, you know, we we get that one goal against us, it has a lot more jeopardy, you know. So whereas we're giving up less chances, each one is kind of more important, and we've reduced our output. We're only getting 3.42, I think, shots on target per game under Foster. So you've basically got to score 1 in 3, to, you know, just to get a goal. You know, if your shots on target, you have to be scoring around 30% to get a goal per game. That's, you know, that's quite a lot of pressure on the forwards, and so there's a lot more jeopardy both up front and in defence. This part of the thing with the Schumacher era was, yeah, you knew you were going to concede, but you always felt like you could go and score. And sometimes you're on the wrong side of that, sometimes you're on the right side. And we were blessed to have the unnaturally good finishing that we had for a while, you know, at the start of the season. But you always felt there was another chance. You didn't feel like, well, that's it, game over. And sometimes I feel, because of what we're not producing, when the opposition score 1 or 2, you think, well, that's it, that's game over. Even one goal can have that kind of feeling. Whereas under Schumacher, you might go 2 down and think, well, we can get 2 goals in 20 minutes or so. So I think psychologically for the fans, that does have an effect. But there's definitely been a defensive improvement. Doesn't mean we're actually that good defensively. We're still, you know, we've still got the same players. There's only so much Foster can do with organisation and off the ball work. But, you know, he has lived up to a degree to that side of his game. I think the big problem is the difference between the XG we're producing and the XG that's produced against us. I think that's slightly worse nowadays, purely because we're just producing so much less up front. Although we've reduced our XG against, our XG has dropped off more than we've reduced the chances against us. So I think over the past 12 games, only Millwall have a worse relative XG between what the team is producing on the pitch and the opposition are producing. So, you know, the imbalance between what you should potentially score and what the opposition should, of those teams down the bottom, sort of with us, discounting Rotherham, I didn't put those in the calculations, but out of QPR, Huddersfield, Swansea, Stoke, Blackburn, Birmingham, Wednesday, us and Millwall, it was only Millwall who had a minus 0.58 XG per game on average, and we were 0.39. So that's kind of the problem, is there's a lot more jeopardy. If the opposition is going to score and we're not producing a lot, but they're producing more chances than us, doesn't really matter how good you are defensively, because you can lose all those games 1-0, basically, is what that stat suggests. The point you make is on the money. We need to start producing more up front. We need to regain some of that. We need to regain, as Alberto suggested, you know, there's going to be a reduction one way, but it needs to be a more, you know, there needs to be an equilibrium between the reduction and the production. And, you know, that's a hard balance to get. It's not a magic formula where you just say defend a bit more and attack a bit less, guys. It's so much more complicated than that. But as we've highlighted, I think there's metrics that we've seen that we're performing so badly, and that a change in certain parts of the pitch, certain aspects of the play, you know, seem like a no-brainer and should provide some better results.
I'm going to skip on, Adam. I'm going to give this next one to you, but we're going to move on to Morgan Whittaker. Ben put together some stats that everyone will be able to read in the newsletter and Argyle Life blog post on Whittaker's performance under Schumacher and Foster. Headline numbers, 18% less touches, basically 30% less touches in opposition box, 37% fewer shots, the same XG. That's a big reduction between 18 and 37% in the key touches, dangerous touches and shots. What's going on there? Is this systemic? Is this that opposition teams are can put 2 men on him with impunity, given we don't have the Azaz threat on the other side? Is it a drop in form? What are you seeing from these numbers, or is it all three?
Yes, possibly a cycle, I'm thinking, in the sense that they'll we'll have a game, like, let's pick on West Brom as an example, where it doesn't work out for Whittaker. You know, that will lead to a drop in morale. That will lead to us not trying it more often. And when it doesn't work again, the same thing happens again. I think, as far as Whittaker's concerned, it's pretty damning. And it's particularly damning when you consider that, actually, when Foster first came in, Whittaker's run of form didn't stop. He's scored a goal against Cardiff. He scored the winner at Swansea. And in that time, we've rejected a quite substantial bid from Lazio. So it's not as if Whittaker dropped off right away. It's what's been happening since is a worry. I mean, you've said it there, fewer touches and even fewer touches that in the opposition's box. He's not getting into those key positions that we want him to be in as often as he has. So what's happened? Obviously, the fact that we've got less of an attacking input as a team does not help. And it makes it a lot easier to mark Whittaker out the game when you know that there's not too much more creative that we're actually going to manage to do off of it. And I do think that it's fair to say that there's been a drop in form, which is nothing against the player because he's been largely excellent, but he was so good. Again, much like a lot of the stats we've mentioned, so good in the first half of the season that, of course, you'd expect some sort of reversion to the mean in the second half of the season, even if it wasn't quite as to this extent. So yes, there has been a drop off in his own personal performance. Fair enough, he's a young player; that's going to happen sometimes. But again, it's one of those. I'd go back to the same point that I made earlier: is that down to the coaching that he's not getting into the positions that he ought to be? I suppose that's up for debate. But whether you blame the coaching entirely, I think you'd certainly say that it hasn't helped, and the fact that we are in a situation where he's much easier for opponents to mark out of the game, safe in the knowledge that we don't have another Finazaz who's going to, you know, put those defence splitting passes in or be the creative force that he was in the first half of the season. Now we don't have that, obviously. Yeah, the key is obviously Whittaker. And when you know that, of course, it's easy to defend against, and that's going to mean that the players' outputs are a little less than they could have been. But I don't think you can put it all down to that because, as I say, for the first month or so of Foster's era, Zaz wasn't here and Whittaker was still putting in some excellent performances. So, again, I admit this is, again, sitting on the fence, non-committal answer, but I do agree that it's a little bit of everything that's led us to the situation we're in as it stands.
And I think the numbers show that he's actually doing, in front of goal, he's doing well. So, you know, he's having less touches. Is that down to the opposition marking him out? Is that because he's not making himself available? But he's getting 2.4 shots per game under Foster. He was getting 3.81 under Schumacher. But his shots on target haven't dropped much at all. So, but just to stop reading out numbers, 33%, a third of his shots were on target under Schumacher. Under Foster, 45% of his shots were on target. So he's upped his accuracy, even though he's getting less shots and less touches. He's still getting the same expected goals per game, despite having less shots and less touches. So he's doing well when he has the opportunity. He's being creative, and the actual goals he's scoring, he's still outperforming. So under Schumacher, it was an XG of 0.23, but getting 0.43 goals per game is almost double what you would expect him to get. Under Foster, 0.23 XG, exactly the same. And 0.42 goals. So he's literally like, you know, 100th of a centile per game less goals. So he's actually being very clinical, more clinical under Foster than he was under Schumacher. So he can't be faulted for his efforts on goal. It's about, why is he not getting more of them? To be fair, although he's getting 40 touches per game now, and he was getting 49 just about under Schumacher, the last two games skew that massively. Without the last two games, he's down to 35 touches per game. So that's a huge decrease in touches. So the questions have to be asked. Is he not doing enough to get himself free, or is it a systemic thing? Personally, I think it's a systemic thing. I think when he was able to press further forward into space, you know, that suited his game more to cut back in from the dead ball line. But, you know, that's not the role that Foster's given him. Then does he need to adapt to what's being asked? I don't know. You can't make yourself necessarily overnight better in the air and things. So, yeah, again, what does the eye tell you? It's hard to... The people have argued for all sorts. People have argued, haven't they, that he's being a bit lazy, or people have argued that, you know, he doesn't suit the system. People have argued that the system needs to change. I guess we'll see going forward. Now, the last two games, he's had more touches. Is he going to... Is that a sign that Foster's getting him into the game more? Is it a sign that he personally is getting himself into the game more? You know, we'll have to wait and see on those.
Yeah, I should have... noted that in the last two games, Whittaker had 64 and 70 touches respectively, which was a big improvement in your... These are your numbers, Ben. First 10 games under Foster, he only had 34 touches. So he's doubled touches of the ball from the first couple of games under Foster to now. So that's clearly something that has been addressed. And they want to get him on the game more. I want to move on again. Alberto, you've produced this wonderful chart, which was actually reproduced from the first stats pod under Schumacher, which makes it all the more interesting. And it's the scatter graph of relegation threatened teams since the 18-19 season, showing the ones that survived and the ones that got relegated. Now, you plotted Schumacher's Argyle statistically on the graph. Everyone needs to go and look at this on Argyle Life or on One Team Endeavour newsletter. Schumacher's Argyle is a huge outlier in terms of goals scored, goals conceded. We know that. It's right up in the top right. It was marked in red because teams that have those characteristics don't tend to survive relegation. You've now plotted Foster's Argyle on the same graph. He's almost on the crosshair of bang on average for a relegation threatened team's XG and a relegation threatened team's XGA. So Foster has somehow managed to produce almost the bang average relegation team. But more often than not, teams with that characteristic tend to survive. There's a lot of green badges around here, just about, and a very, very slight increase in XG would tip it much more towards the green teams, right? Is that how you would how I should be interpreting that graph? How should we interpret what we're seeing there? Because it's quite an interesting visualization of how teams fare and their characteristics, isn't it?
Well, first of all, you're not going to get a definitive answer from me because I'm Italian and I'm superstitious. So I'll try to be as balanced as I can. Well, from that graph that you will be able to see in the One Team in Devon newsletter, you can see that, yes, basically, as James said, the performance of Argyle nowadays are under Foster of the average relegation threatened team. From then on, what could improve to enhance the chances of staying up? Well, first of all, since Foster has been praised for his improved for improving the team defensive wise, I think there is again room for improvement, and we should exploit that. Why? So because even though regardless of all the good stats that we mentioned before, we are still facing the fourth most shots, and we have the fifth highest expected goals against in the championship, which doesn't help if, on the other hand, you don't produce more offensive-wise. So, of course, for us, it's easy to say that. No, we see the result, we comment on that, we are football fans. Some of us do that for a job, but it's not that easy. The coach itself knows there's no coach that just wants to play his way without the goal of winning every game or trying to get the most out of every game. And we have to consider that sometimes I see on Twitter these days the question like, since Schumacher is not doing well now and Foster is not doing well, would you take back Schumacher in this team to lead you through the salvation? Well, to salvation. It's not that easy. We are forgetting that for how football is, simply Argyle became a slightly weaker team from the first part of the season, while other teams improved because they had the chance and they had the budget to do so. So there, it's not written anywhere that with Schumacher, with these players, we would have the same output of the Schumacher of the previous player. Actually, most probably no. For the not just because there isn't Azaz and there isn't Candle anymore. But also because teams tend to adjust to your tactic, tend to read you better. You know, at the beginning of the season, Argyle was also kind of a surprise for most of the teams. So, yeah, that we are now an average team that fights for avoid relegation. But if you will be able to watch from that chart, you can notice that in the past five seasons, there are just two teams that ended up safe at the end of the season with a similar, with a worse defense than ours. While all the others, and they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, they were all safe, either because they, for sure, because they had a better defense, but also because they had a, in general, better offensive output. So the team has to improve. It's not, we are not like done. And I think that this international breaks gives a big chance to Foster to prove it to the board and to the fans that is worthy of a chance until the end of the season and for eventually next year with the board planning on giving him the team that he wants. Because again, Foster came in a difficult situation with a team that, again, has one of the lowest budget in the league, had a terrible problem with defending, just lost one of his key players, if not more, because again, the backup of Luke Candle was very important as well. So let's not underestimate the context where Foster came in, came at Argyle. So let's we can't do much more than have faith and back the teams and the players and the coach, despite the recent answer that he gave in the press conference. Let's stick together. Let's hope that this team from now to the end of the season can improve, because if it doesn't, then the higher chances is that we are risking seriously relegation. So nobody wants that. Fingers crossed, they are all professional. They are all working towards the club's interest and their own interest. So let's see after this international break. The last two games, I have to be honest, I've watched them. I wasn't excited, but again, if I tell you that you would won the match against Blackburn and you would draw the match against Preston, I don't think that anybody would come up and say, no, that's unimaginable with the output that we've seen in the games. I think it could have been a fair result as well as the results that we got, which was a draw and a loss. Tight matches, football is a game of episodes, and sometimes it turns in your favor, sometimes not.
I think that's a really good point you made about if you are standing still, especially in this league, you're going backwards because everyone will take any advantage to use their resources to improve the team. And if you lose key players like we have and maybe question the replacements, then you know, we have gone maybe slightly backwards, and that is accentuated by teams using their financial might. Adam, looking at that chart, a very small, if we actually became a little bit more solid, and if it, even better, if we became a bit more solid and increased our output just a little bit more, we'd be sat quite comfortably amongst a lot of other teams that historically survived, wouldn't it? It would be, looking at this, does it give you heart that progress isn't too far away statistically, or are you not?
Maybe a bit of both. Because I think that chart is, as it always is, and in its updated form, is obviously incredibly useful to see who's gone down, who's stayed up in those battles, and where they sit. And it does certainly appear, you know, just a small improvement on our end would put us into a situation where we're actually in some quite nice sections of that chart. It obviously wouldn't guarantee safety, but it would get us in the right direction. Now, I guess when you think of it that way, the question is, are we going to make that improvement? And yeah, I guess maybe. I mean, the time will only tell. And I think the international break that we're in right now is obviously going to be pretty crucial. Now, I think I've probably made my feelings pretty clear on the previous podcast about exactly what I wanted to happen in this international break, and it wasn't Ian Foster still being our manager today. But as it is the case, then the time spent on the grass, the time getting the team, and particularly the players that were here before Foster arrived, many of whom won't be off on international duty, like a few of the loanees and the youngsters will be, a good chance to get them drilled into just how we want Foster to play. Could that lead to that tiny improvement that we would perhaps need to get ourselves into those good sections? It's possible. As I say, it's not the way I wanted this to go, but it's perhaps the next best thing if we are able to get that improvement and give ourselves the best possible opportunity.
Ben, is this the chart that Argyle board decision makers are looking at and seeing, well, we could sack Foster, but we're on the kind of precipice of being in the right kind of areas numbers wise here to sort of statistically stay up? Is this kind of thing a factor, do you think, in keeping Foster, because the scale of the challenge perhaps doesn't look statistically as big as it does when you're sat in the ground on match day?
Yeah, if stats gave you all the answers, it would be a pretty boring game, wouldn't it? Because you just, you know what to do, and all games would be foregone conclusions. You know, as well as those, you know, the statistics of output, or in terms of the threat that you carry and how weak you are at the back, you also have to consider things like form. You know, a lot of Foster's points were picked up at the start of the reign. We've had four games at home without scoring. Does that factor into those decisions? But ultimately, as Alberto said, we've got the squad we've got. There's only so much you can do with the resources at hand. And as the board might be saying, we don't know, do you? There's no guarantee that bringing in another manager will produce more with the same ingredients, or a better dish, if you want to use that analogy. If you can gain, as Adam was suggesting, if you can gain those small marginal gains that Alberto thinks we, you know, you could wring out with a little bit more organisation or a little bit more focus, then Foster certainly has the nous of all his shortcomings that people will happily talk about, myself included. He doesn't lack tactical nous, so he will certainly be able, hopefully, to be able to highlight that to the players. Now, whether they can execute it is a different matter, because the things that might be needed to rectify you know, it's very easy to say, yeah, we should score more goals and we should give away less chances. But the things that are required in this system to do that might not be within the skills or the physical abilities of the players to do. So there will need to be perhaps a little bit of flexibility from the manager. With the players themselves may need to be need to adjust their natural way of playing. And try to play more to a certain a different set of directives, even if it's uncomfortable. But ultimately, it's going to be squeaky, isn't it? That's ultimately, you know, regardless, we're not going to be all of a sudden picking up an extra probably 0.5 XG for or against. This is kind of be around about where we are. We might have a few more performances like Middlesbrough where the opponents match or allow us to play our style of play. To, you know, to its strengths, and we might have a few more games where, you know, the high block and then the sort of like the defensive chop, sort of like, and allowing us the midfield to kick it about to ourselves works wonders, and we can't. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. Individual matchups will be important. Individual game plans will be important. Yeah, but we could, as Alberto says, as fans, all you can really do is watch and hope, and let's hope that. Between the players and the coach, they can get it over the line. But if we don't, it's, as Alberto says, not necessarily down to Foster or, you know, or the players not performing this second half of the season. It's a whole new set of circumstances and effectively, you know, a whole bunch of different teams involved in post January window. So, you know, the maybe we're seeing the improvement of certain teams, the decline of ourselves and others, and maybe finding causation that isn't there, because causation or correlation rather doesn't always equal causation. Just because something seems to be happening at the same time as something else doesn't mean that that's the cause. And just because we started to decline comparatively, you know, in the 12 games that we've had under Foster to what we had before, doesn't mean that there's, you know, as much as we can point statistically, we can say that wouldn't have happened if Schumacher was still here either.
Right. Well, I think we've been through a lot. We'll leave it there for tonight. At 1 hour 20 of stats, I think, is the maximum we should expect of anybody. So, guys, thank you very much. Alberto, grazie for putting all this together, what you do for these podcasts and for the One Team Endeavour newsletter. Stats are just incredible. You've obviously got, I know you have a couple of day jobs, so... you find the time for them is so appreciated. A lot of stats, a lot of XG chat, but I think we have a highly objective look at what is being quite a highly charged situation over the last few weeks. And hopefully maybe it settles a few nerves or focuses the mind. And as I said earlier, we're supposed to be a data-driven club. You know that higher ups at the inside the club will be looking at these stats and a hell of a lot more. So hopefully we've given some insight into what they're seeing, and maybe it can even guide some of our expectations and decisions. Guys, thank you very much. See you soon. And everyone, thank you for listening. Good night.
Thank you, guys.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear, and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.